With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Pilot Episodes, your weekly, no, monthly, maybe six weekly, we don't really know, dose of aviation podcast. I am joined, as always, by my three pilots. I'll start off with Dunk. Dunk, how are you?
I am absolutely fabulous, thanks, JB.
And tell me, what have you been doing? Who have you been instructing and what have you been instructing them in?
Well, I've been doing, since I last saw you, I haven't really been instructing. I've been assessing.
Ooh.
I've been the miserable assessor of people's instructional ability. But it's been great fun. So, since we last spoke, Goddess is leaning forward intently.
I'm listening.
I went off to the United States of America on a whistle stop tour.
Oh, wow.
Over to go and look at some very interesting and exciting stuff, which we could talk about a little later if you want.
Yes, please.
Some of it is virtual reality training from an outfit that the United States is trialing called Pilot Training Next.
Ooh.
So that's very interesting. We can bang on about that for a bit. And then I went on a road trip up to a place called Shepherd Air Force Base, where they run. It's one of Parky's favorite things, because he went and did his training there, a place called NGEPS, which is... Parky gets really wound up because I put an S on the end of it.
It is NGEPS.
He gets very... I don't know why he gets so irate about it.
It's a bizarre trait he has.
But it means that whenever we mention it, we should call it NGEPS. I've made sure that I have done ever since. It's absolutely marvellous. Anyway, so that's where they do European combined jet training, effectively. So they do it on Texan and the T-38, which is the two-seat version of Europe in Top Gun, which I think you perhaps will tell us about a little later. In Top Gun... the film, if you remember the MiG-28s, do you remember those?
The MiG-28s?
Yeah, the MiG-28s, the black ones with a big star on the
tail.
Oh,
right, yeah, okay, because they didn't exist.
6G negative pushover.
6G negative pushover. So basics, JB, basics. So those are the single-seat version of the T-38, which is what they do the training on.
Oh.
So it's what Parky trained on, and we were looking to see whether we would send... British instructors and students over there to start training. So that was great. I then came straight back from that, and I've been then 2 weeks at RAF Valley, and I was assuring the instructional standards of the guys there. So lots of T2 flying, which was really good. So everything from combat to low level to circuit flying. So did that, which was ace. And then on Monday, I had an absolutely great time. I went to Scampton. I had to go and fly with the guys that are going to teach the new additions to the Red Arrows. So the guys that are just joining the team, I had to go and assess their teaching of the new Red Arrows maneuvers. So for the first time in 13 years, I went and got in a Hawk, the front seat of a Hawk T1.
Oh,
and
nice.
I was Red 3 again. It was ace. So I spent Monday, I flew three trips with the Reds with these boys doing low-level aeros and low-level PFLs and RAFAT brakes. So it was brilliant. So the flying side has been really, really good.
But did you still forget your smoke, Dunk?
as always. Yeah, smoke. Well, it was erratic to say the least.
I have a quick question about smoke, and we might have discussed this before. But do you know the French display team when they do the tricolour?
Yeah.
Now, did you notice the other week that they did the tricolour, except for on one of the outside colours, one of the guys either got his smokes wrong and did a red smoke, but then somebody else told me that they do that to commemorate the war dead. Was it wrong, or do they commemorate the war dead like that?
No, I've never seen them commemorate the war dead like that before. I think it was probably wrong.
Oh, dear.
I saw some banter on Twitter that he pigged.
Yeah, I think he pressed the wrong button.
Devastate.
Damn good excuse, though, isn't it?
Yeah, let's what can we make up? They'll never banter us if we say it was the war dead.
He's just started a tradition, though.
Yeah.
Exactly. We've all got to do it now. Brilliant.
So aside from the flying, though, I've got a couple of other things, both of which involve Parkinson.
Excellent.
All right. So the first thing was I got a surprise last-minute ticket to go and watch the film Spitfire last night, which was brilliant. It was just fantastic, beautifully filmed, of course, beautiful aeroplane. But the best bit, of course, was all our mates, the veterans that we've known over the years, talking about flying. It was just marvellous. It's quite emotional, to be honest. And then, of course, Parky had a very fleeting part in that, taxiing past, but looking very cool in his Spitfire. And this is for debate.
Hang on. I know what's going on. Go on.
Talking about looking cool. I think we've all...
Hold there, Duncan. Hold there, Duncan. Enough. Because I might as well introduce Parky now. Parky, how are you?
Hang on a minute.
No. Come on, Parky.
He's got a line. He's been saving this up. That's why he didn't want me to mention it.
So, Parky.
Parky, you need to get a social media account, mate. You are famous.
What have you been doing, mate?
He doesn't know.
Slightly nervous. I think I know where this one's going to go, but I'll blindly ignore it at the moment, and hopefully you'll all forget.
Yes, you're probably right. Yeah. You probably will.
Yeah, but I've been, same-o, done a bit of spit flying. This kind of season's just about coming to an end, so I've got another couple of days in October, and that's it. But now it's been lovely. The weather's been pretty cool, and the Spitfire's been going well, so, doing that.
So when...
My review mate takes about 1 minute, and Dunk's takes about 20, by the way.
That's because yours is the same every time. I've just been...
20 hours of Spitfire flying.
Mostly. In fact, I've done nothing else. I've just been sat in the Spitfire all the time, flying around.
Anything else you've done, mate?
Anything at all?
That's it. Yeah.
And, Parky, are you sure you haven't done anything?
What have you been up to?
All right, interesting. Well, yeah, let's see what has Godders been up to. Hello, Godders.
Hello. Getting trains and forgetting about podcasts and running
terrible.
Home and stuff.
Terrible.
I've had an interesting couple of weeks, actually. I've actually got in some aeroplanes. They're generally flown by other people. I went up to the Hebrides yesterday.
Yeah, this sounds really interesting.
To go and look at a missile range, which was... very interesting for someone who flies a desk at the moment, like me. And I did see Parky's little face, although we didn't get to go and actually speak to each other, at Tuxford Air Show, a rainy air show, 2 weekends ago. Which
what was he
was
wearing, Godders?
Yeah, what was he wearing?
I couldn't quite see from where I was, but then I subsequently saw a picture that we may be talking about in a bit. And
I forgot to mention the Duxford Air Show. That was it. Yes.
Yeah. So you had. You forgot to mention that you'd flown in an 18 ship of Spitfires. I mean,
is that right?
I did that. That sort of thing.
Yeah. That was good fun.
Complaining. Yeah. So, Dunk gets a massive intro. I don't get anything.
No, tell us what you're doing.
Oh, yeah. By the way, I flew at Duxford.
Oh, yeah.
18 ship Spitfire. So, I mean, that must be pretty much as big as you can get any Spitfire formation on the planet right now.
Brilliant. It was, we all cranked up together and taxiing takeoff, and it's just 18 Spits getting airborne, and It's brilliant. Yeah, there was some amusing.
Did you get scared on landing?
No, that one. The,
run
the
down by
Sunday. Were you there Sunday or Saturday?
No, Saturday.
Yeah, Sunday it was all across. It was a little bit crosswindy, but it was all good. Particularly pleasurable on Saturday, and it wasn't raining.
What was the latest mark of spit which they've got flying there?
The Mark 18, I think, was probably the latest. I think there was just maybe there was a 14, so a couple of Griffins, and nice. The rest were, you know, ones, twos, ones, fives, nines, 16s, I guess.
Hmm.
But it was good. How did it look on the ground?
Oh, I'd gone by then, mate.
Don't stick around for that sort of stuff.
No, I didn't know it was going. I had no idea what was going on at this air show. Things would just come along and whizz around the place. And I was hosting an RAF 100 event. So I was hosting and sneaking out every now and again to see some brilliant aeroplanes. I loved Parky. Did you see the Lysander flying around the place? You know, the two vampires with the jet provost. There was tons of old stuff. I loved that flipping air show.
Parky,
most of it out the window.
The F-35 with the Astor and the GR-4, the 617 Squadron tribute.
Yes.
That was awesome. That was brilliant.
Which was nice.
Now, Parky, that Mark 19 Spitfire, is that the one in sky blue?
It was a Mark 18. No, it's a silver Mark 18 Spitfire.
Oh, is it? I've just looked up the Mark 19 here, and I'm looking at this aircraft, and I'm sure it's the same one that flew side by side with Concorde on its last flight into Filton.
What's the registration of it?
Let me see.
915 or 853.
Hmm.
What's the Rolls Royce one?
I can't. Yeah. PS 583.
Rolls Royce.
Hmm.
Yeah.
There we go. Sorry. So you were at Missile Range, Godders.
Yes, I was. Yeah, we had a trip up there just to go and look around the place, see really what they do up there, because we've got a pretty large training bill coming up with F-35s back in the country with the carrier and the carrier strike groups, all the ships that are in and around that strike group that, you know, up around that area is just a fantastic place to train, and it was really good, you know, having, I'm sure the boys have done as well, but you know, over the last few years, having shot a couple of missiles at flare packs, for example, towed by a, you know, a little target drone.
Mm.
I was actually able to go and see these things. Do you remember the Mirac and the Banshee fellas?
Yeah, I mean,
Jindy. I'd forgotten about the Jindy. The Jindy was practically real size, wasn't it?
Yeah, so what are these things? You have to tell me.
Well, so they're essentially small jet model aircraft that have all sorts of capabilities on, not least to be able to tow a flare pack, for example, behind them. So back in the day, we'd go out into one of these missile ranges. You would get talked on, or if you're in a radar equipped aircraft, you find it yourself. They'd drop the flare pack and you would shoot one of your live missiles at it, because you all used to get generally about one a tour, I think it is, to go and shoot, so that you knew what it was like and weren't nervous about it if it were real.
Oh, nice. Now, you told me you saw some sort of launch system. Am I allowed to say that?
So it's a launcher they've got up there for a particular type of target, which goes quite high and quite fast, because of where it is in the Hebrides, is and they can clear the range out there. There's obviously not a lot around. I mean, it was an absolutely beautiful place, absolutely stunning, even in the 30 knot wind. But the it was just one of a bunch of different types of target arrays that they've got. They then have got a sort of trail. They can track all sorts of stuff, instrumentation, and a really cool place for an aviation geek.
It sounds amazing. So, I mean, I don't know if you're breaking some sort of national security code here, but you kind of described where you were. In fact, you sent me a location on WhatsApp. But bloody hell, you're miles away. So how many personnel are out there?
Oh, they've got, I mean, it's run by a company called Kinetic. They've got probably, you know, a few to 100. It depends what they're doing at any one time. But what was really interesting was just in the airport on the way back, looking at what was RAF Benbecula. And there was a picture of, I took a photo of it, actually. I'll have to put it on Twitter feed. It was a picture of a Coastal Command painted B-17 a lower turret from 1940 and the range of aeroplanes that they flew out there in Coastal Command during the Second World War. You know, I the boys will know Benbecula with Stornoway just up the way as well. I've never been in there on the ground. I don't know whether you guys have.
No.
Maybe.
But yeah, you can even remember Duxford, so I'm not...
Benbecula is Parkey's forward deployment base for anything operational, isn't it? That's about as far as he'll go. It's like anything over sit. Well, I'm not going past Benbecula.
That's true. That's where he was last operation.
I'm just getting some rather offensive messages from Mason that I was looking at as well. Yes,
you're right. That is offensive.
But yeah, you know, so I was looking at the squadrons that flew out of there during the war, and they flew Hudson's, Flying Fortress, Swordfish, Wellington, and Wellington's until the end of the war. So there was a ton of people and put a load of infrastructure in around that area that's still there today.
Amazing!
So it was a really good visit. It was really nice to be back in Scotland and back in the wilds over there.
Yeah,
and it is a fantastic training base. You know, when you look at the amount of area of range space that they can open up. It's just brilliant.
So that's not the only thing which has been going on this week, of course, because we have aircraft on aircraft carriers, amazingly. Well, actually, sorry, fake news. We've always had aircraft on aircraft carriers. We've got jets on aircraft carriers.
Yes. So it was a pretty momentous week in the programme, actually, with, I don't know whether I've mentioned it here, but in programme terms, getting those jets to land on the carrier within the week that we said was going to happen back in 2012 was the program equivalent of putting a man on the moon because of everything that had to happen. You know, there were integrated test force jets, so instrumented jets from Patuxent River, which is one of the F-35 test bases, flown by Brit pilots. And clearly in the weeks before, Queen Elizabeth had to navigate hurricanes and all sorts of things in order to get the right place at the right time. And they've just been thrashing through the trials. And everyone's got a massive smile on their face when, you know, when you A, seeing the jets back on board again, but B, seeing how easy it is compared to the days that Dunk will remember of snake fighting in the cockpit and trying to find the only spot on the deck to parallel parking.
Now, that's a good point, actually, isn't it? Because am I right in thinking both of you guys have operated off carriers?
No, Dunk has. I never did. I had a nosebleed on the day, so
I just want to go back a second before we go any further, just to say, right, hang on, you know, I get it, there was a lot of moving parts, but I'm not sure that I can put up with you comparing it to landing a man on the moon.
Well,
I'm sorry, I think it's a step too far, man.
I'm not sure. I mean,
I said the program equivalent. I didn't say it was the same as.
Yeah, and you've got to remember,
shoot them into space first.
and you've got to remember, all that was required for landing a man on the moon is for Stanley Kubrick to make a film and pretend they landed a man on the moon.
Bit of conspiracy theory here.
Yeah,
that's
what I heard.
You need to get your other podcast mates in, JB, for that conversation.
Yeah, quite. Dunk, tell me a little bit about what carrier life is like, because I don't think we've ever touched that. Obviously, you guys are all land-based, but no, not so much you.
I thought it was fantastic, actually. It was just, in terms of aviation experiences, to be honest, nothing comes close to the precision. Well, that's true, yeah. Your supersonic it beats all things, of course. You've gone supersonic, nothing's happened, except the speedos ticked over. I'm only envious. But the precision that's required from everyone, the guys that are taxiing you on the deck, there's so little space. You have to follow their direction. I mean, normally, people marshal you, but you kind of go, well, I know where I'm going, and you sort of put yourself on the spot pretty much. But the guys that are marshalling you on the boat are marshalling you within centimetres of other aircraft. So you have to follow their direction absolutely precisely. Everything is that level of precision. And then, of course, you sit looking off at the end, which is the boat's only 600 foot long, which sounds like what the old one, it sounds quite big, but we sort of pulled into Lucca in Malta at one point, the thing was anchored up, and it was next to one of these cruise liners. The cruise liner was about three times the size. Wow. It made it look like a toy. So you line up on the end of the deck and then, power up and then, just go, right, well, here we go, throttle forward and throw yourself off the end of the deck. And it's just the most phenomenal experience doing that. And then coming back, and when you come back to arrive on the aircraft carrier, that 600-foot boat looks tiny. You've probably heard it before or read it before, but you're coming back down and it looks the size of a matchbox, and you think, flipping heck, I've got to land on it. So it really is it concentrates the mind in every way. So I really, really enjoyed it. It was a brilliant experience to fly off and back onto the aircraft carrier.
Now,
I read a great phrase once, and it was, I think it was from an F-14 pilot, and it was talking about night carrier landings, because, F-35 is a big game in that it's got lots of thrust. It's easy to land on a deck, so it takes a lot of those heartbeats away that people have used in terms of getting jets onto aircraft carriers. And hang on, someone's just passing me something. But so the phrase was that landing this F-15 on the deck at night was like turning the lights off in a room with a stamp on the floor, falling over and trying to lick it.
Nice. Nice.
One of our friends that is a guy called Jez Attridge. He went and did an exchange tour and was flying F-14s. Some cat and trap. So it was F-18, sorry. So F-18s, cat and traps off American carriers. And he tells a really good story, which I'm just going to replicate now because it's worthwhile, of his first time doing that. And he'd landed on the carrier. He was all sweaty and like flipping heck. That was hard work. And he was being taxied, as I described, by you follow we call them the chockheads, the guys that marsh you to the absolute letter. But the nose of the F-18 was pretty long, and he was taxiing him what looked like over the side of the carrier. So Jez just kept stopping. So he's stopping and shaking his head like, I'm not going any further. And the chockhead was pointing at him and then giving him the sign to move forward. And Jez just kept saying no. And eventually Jez got onto the and so the chockhead then started giving him another sign, which was a closed fists going up into his other hand. And he was taking that fist out of the other hand. And in the end, Jez didn't know what that was. So he called the flyco, the guy on the bridge, and said, sir, I've taxied forward. I don't know what the guy wants. He's putting a fist into his other hand and pulling it out, and I'm not sure what that means. And the guy said, son, it means take your head out of your ass and follow his instructions.
There we go. So
he had another brilliant story on that one as well. So say that it was the Enterprise that he landed on. So they were doing these sort of hot changes.
Godders, what's the fact about the Enterprise?
Ooh,
I've told you this.
Have we covered this before?
Captain Kirk's flagship.
Is it different to the others?
It is. It's the only ship in its class. It's not a Nimitz class vessel. It's an Enterprise class vessel.
He's so fine.
Yeah, he definitely is a spy.
There you go. Sorry, mate.
It could have been that one. So that was the Enterprise that he landed on. They ended up, another guy was then going to do the cat shot. So they changed. Jez gets out. The jet goes off. And he stood there with his helmet bag, wondering where the hell to get off the flight deck. And he walks through this door. And he's got his Brit Union Jack on his helmet. And he's got different rank stripes on. And he's carrying this his helmet bag with a big Union Jack on the side. This guy said, sir, can I help you? And he went, this is the USS George Bush, isn't it? He went, sir, you're on the wrong aircraft carrier.
Well, really? He actually got
handled around the place before he went, no, I just landed in an F-18. I'm supposed to be here.
Really? Hang on. Let me be clear. Did he actually get an aircraft carrier?
No, he's pretending to.
Very good. Love that.
Sense of humor way and almost goes to the side of a shot for being a spy.
That's excellent. excuse me.
Oh, God. And,
So we've got flyers, as you've said before. Where have they been, Goddess? Have they been embedded on American ships doing that job, waiting to come back to the UK?
Yeah, exactly that. We've had for a while. It's called the Long Lead Specialist Skills Program, where from air traffickers to pilots, deck handlers, you know, the chockheads that that Dunk was just talking about, and various other people actually from logistics and all sorts of engineers, different walks of life on the carrier, have been embedded in within US carriers so that we didn't forget how to do it. So when Queen Elizabeth turned up the first time and we set sail, there were actually a lot of highly trained people on board, so that ultimately when the first F-35 landed last week, they knew exactly what they were doing and it wasn't a shock.
Amazing.
So
stuff.
It's been a really massively useful program, and you know, there's people with a huge amount of carrier experience. We're putting 35 onto the ship and into the sort of development program as well. So it's been good.
Well, I'm going to continue the theme with carrier aviation.
Very Parky, very quiet.
Yeah, well, I'm going to bring Parky.
Might have gone.
I'm going to bring Parky back now, actually.
Asleep.
But I've been reading.
He flew F-4s though, so he can tell us about F-4 carrier landings.
Well, that is.
Yeah, they were Navy aircraft. The one thing I had from a it was an F-18 driver who was exchanged with us, and. His little kid jumped into a swimming pool and he couldn't swim. And he goes, "Hey, my son's a NAFOD." And it was like, what is that? What were you talking about? And I don't know if you ever heard of this expression in America, but it was in their flying reports and it was no apparent fear of that. And they would write it at times, night landings. You know, the boys weren't exactly nailing it. And they essentially nearly died and crashed. But the pilots were kind of like, yeah, that one was all right. And that went on their reports as, oh God, we've got a NAFOD.
Did that come out for everyone else?
No apparent fear of death.
Wow.
A NAFOD. Right. And yeah. He came out, that is genuinely a report or an abbreviation that was written on your sort of night landings. Did you have any NAFOD moments there, Dunk?
No, my ears went pop for night landings, but I don't think so. I think I was relatively careful. I think.
I'll have to
ask someone else.
I'm just going to move this on slightly because I've done some reading this week. Oh, actually, last week. I can't remember the book, but it is effectively the setup of Top Gun and how the U.S. Navy.
The weapons school or the movie?
No, the actual flight school. So it was taking the lads off the carriers after they got a pretty rough time over Vietnam, establishing a flight school, and then the quite astounding success after that. And most of it was done in, well, F-4s.
Yeah.
Silence.
Yeah.
Silence.
I think you're right, JB. It was, with the advent of air-to-air, the art of dogfighting and certainly, guns kills. Some of the Phantoms didn't have a... They just relied on either radar guided or heat seeking missile. But I think that the kills were very poor, and the weaponry and the air combat skills had been lost. So that's why they introduced the Top Gun, just to raise the game.
When we went to Farnborough, we spoke to a graduate, didn't we? And
yes,
he said the exact same thing.
He said, frantic.
He said. That it was guns combat effectively, wasn't it? They were that they were teaching. I guess there was some missile stuff in there, but it was
there was loads of missile stuff.
Yeah.
So one of their biggest problems was they were firing their missiles outside of the capability of the missile. So it was a spiral. And the other thing that they didn't realize as well is spirals weren't meant to come back on ship. So they'd fly off with these things, and they weren't changing them for God knows how long. They weren't overhauling them. So when they were firing them, they simply weren't working.
Yeah, go with that. I've just looked up
and it's something I had read before, actually. It was the Ault report, A-U-L-T. And it says in 1968, the commander of the USS Coral Sea aircraft carrier, Frank Ault, drew up a report on the situation that you've just described, JB.
Mm.
And problem areas were deployment of the F-4, ranging from faults in its Sparrow and Sidewinder missiles to poor aerial combat skills of its pilots.
Yeah.
Among his many recommendations was the creation of a new school specializing in aerial combat. There you go.
So when they taught these lads and they taught them air combat skills, one of the things which I really enjoyed was how they would take the F-4 to the absolute edge. And they've got this great description of basically pointing it up. Now, I'm going to be laughed at here. But pointing up and then waiting for it to come back down. So you're basically falling downwards with smoke coming out of your air intakes. Has anyone tried anything? Has anyone tried anything similar to that in training or else?
What was their outcome? What did they? Why did they want to do that?
They wanted to teach the pilots to fly the aircraft right to the edge of its capability, and also teach them that they can recover from stuff.
Right. So they took
pretty much
past the edge of the
capability. Every aeroplane that I've been in.
Yeah. So they took. So I guess from what you're saying, because if you're describing a tail slide and then jet engines don't like that, they don't like air going in the other way, hence the smoke coming out the intakes.
Yes.
And I've been in that situation as well. But the I guess, you know, they have they're taking them past the limit so that they know where that limit is, and as you say, showing them that they can then recover from it.
Yes, pretty much.
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
that it does give you confidence in your aeroplane. We used to do that in the Harrier, didn't we, in terms of the moving the nozzles and slow loops and viffing and doing all those sorts of things where, it, as I did most of the time, if you didn't get it right by taking, you know, by, it was stuffing the stick forward, wasn't it, to take all the alpha off the aeroplane. If you had any alpha and any side slip when you were using those nozzles, that thing used to just cartwheel around the skies with flames coming out the intake.
Yeah.
And what was funny was I remember going off on, I think it was Exercise Purple Star back in the...
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
90s on the east coast of the US, and we had a familiarization day, and I went off with Pete Squires, actually, and we went off, and it was a slow loop competition. I think I learned more about that aeroplane on that day than any other day's flying, where I just kept screwing it up. Then I'd get a bit better, and you just got more and more confident about, you know, how slow you could pull up into a loop, and then using the nozzles and your feet and your hands and everything to then get it back down the other side, which in combat paid dividends.
It was amazing when you were in trouble. You could pull up, and then you'd pull up into the valley as you described. their JB.
Mm.
But as it hit 100 knots, so 100 knots speed cruising, most, you know, aircraft at that point, there's only one way that they're going, and that's that the nose will just drop out the sky. Aerodynamically, they can't fly anymore, so they just plummet, and then they recover at some point. But in this case, with the Harrier, you could then start to ease in the nozzles, and the aircraft would then rotate around the nozzles, and you'd have to move the stick almost fully forward, as Godders was saying, so that the angle of attack of the air over the wing didn't increase too much, and then it would depart. But if you got it right, and a friend of ours taught me how to do these, a guy called Johnny Earl, you could, as Godders was saying, you could get this thing to loop in the most ridiculously small amount of height, and also very, very slowly. It would be sort of over the top at 70 or 80 knots, and then you could point it downwards and pull the nozzles into what we call the braking stop, and then increase the power again, and it would be spiraling down, nose down, still doing about, I don't know, 100 knots. So it was just an amazing aeroplane.
Bloody hell.
You know, when you learn to handle it properly, it did some incredible things.
Parky, When you were flying Tornadoes, because they're interceptors, they're not really dogfighters, how important was actually learning the old air combat manoeuvres like the guys were doing at Top Gun?
Yeah, I mean, still the same. You could get involved in other VID and identification, so you couldn't fire, you know, missiles at range. You had to essentially go to the merge, report what you were seeing, and, you know, you might not get clearance to engage. You might just never get it. So, you know, you're committed to hitting the merge and turning. And as you mentioned, you know, the Tornado wasn't exactly suited for that, but you still had to do it. And it was all right. You know, it was, I fought against Harriers with the Tornado, and if it was clean, it was quite a good fight. Without doubt, you know, Godders and I will bang on, but the F-16, when I went on to that, was a game changer.
Because really?
It was ridiculously agile. You know, it was at low level, sustained 9G, like the Eurofighter Typhoon will now. And it's built just ridiculous amount of agility and turning. And the thing that drives home to me, you know, with missiles, even if you had fairly capable air-to-air missiles, on a F-16 versus F-16 visual engagement, I would say almost all the fights ended, if there was any kill, it would be a guns kill. That
wow.
was the shot you generally would get. And the weaponeering that you were taught, you know, how to get a decent guns kill on the, particularly on the F-16, it was an amazing gun, was brilliant. And, you know,
Parky?
Yeah.
Did you, because I learned, especially with the USAF, when I went through, you know, so I became what's termed a PES lead. You can lead a two ship around, then you can lead a four ship around. And then very quickly I went into a squadron instructor pilot workup where I was absolutely thrashed. It was the hardest course I've ever done, where you had to replicate, for example, a dogfight on the whiteboard, and that had to look like a god's eye view of what you had just flown. And you had to do a lot of these from memory. You'd watch the radar tapes and everything to try and reconstruct them, even to the point of managing your board space so that all five, six or seven engagements were on the same board in the right direction with the right alpha on the aeroplane.
That's amazing.
But I learned so much about air-to-air combat, about basic fighter maneuvers on that. Was it the same for you, even though you already had 2,000 hours on F4s and F3s?
Yeah, I mean, you know, debriefs, as you say at the time, you obviously look at the HUD film, but that wouldn't really give you, you know, maybe the lessons learned, and, you know, you can use the range and the pods and you can get it all from that. But yeah, it was one of those skill sets, wasn't it? You know, you had to be able to draw up, and I think the pens were 3,000 foot, so the turn radiuses were all right. And, you know, it was a bit painful, I think, you know, recalling it, but definitely a good instructor could quickly draw what he saw that fight, bring out the lessons and, you know, where you won or lost, etc. And that was good. You know, that was definitely a difficult thing to learn, I think.
Yeah, it's a real sort of science in why you're doing certain things that you have to understand, but then is complete art when you go out and just see a situation and react and try and do the right thing.
Yeah, I can only imagine by reading this book that the only way you can get pilots to a sufficient standard is hours in the air. I can't see any cheap way of doing it.
Yeah, I mean, actually, you've hit the nail on the head, JB, in all sorts of ways, and we could go on to all sorts of ranting about flying training systems, and the problem is people have wanted to make them cost less and be more efficient, and sadly, when you want a military flying training system, if you want pilots to be able to perform and be the best, then it's not a cheap way of doing things. And we've kind of learned that the hard way. And so what you're talking about there, we talk about actually even now for people going through Valley, and some of the BFM, so the basic fighter maneuvers that the guys are taught, everything is very canned. It's very set up, and they see something that is that's very they'll see the same thing time and again. And the difficulty is that actually that fluidity that you're talking about, and the ability to then assess something, and as God has said, for it to be an art, effectively, that you realize something different's happening there, and then you maneuver your airplane to try and combat what's happening. And as you say, there's no substitute for actually just going and flying it and flying it and flying it.
Yeah. So, Dunk, how would that compare to, you know, what you just did in America, looking at, you know, virtual training and essentially doing everything in sims?
Well, so the American gig was really interesting. It went for two things, as I mentioned before. The first thing was the pilot training next thing, and that was it's a trial, so it's not part of their set flying training system. They're trialing using virtual reality and Texan aircraft, which are turboprop aircraft, and they are looking at reducing the time through training. It's an experiment, and at the moment, the kind of time that people will spend, so a pilot going into flying training, they'll go into the system, and they'll come out having done about 230 hours in about a 15-month period, and then they will go on to their F-16 FTU, which is their what they call fighter training unit, Goddess.
Yeah, correct.
Yeah, so they'll go off to their FTU after that. What they're looking at, because America is so short of fighter pilots, the same as the UK, they are looking at going, right, in 6 months, we're going to use virtual reality. We're going to train these guys by doing many hours of virtual reality. They're still in a Texan turboprop. They'll do 30 hours of live flying. So they're now saving 200 hours. They don't get to fly the jet that we described before, the T-38. They don't do that. They then go directly to the F-16. Now, my gut feeling is that at the moment is a step too far. There are so many elements that trainee pilot would then be missing. But there is a lot of huge potential to use those systems and that virtual reality system to fill gaps that at the moment are not being filled. So it's a very exciting project, and I hope that we hope that they will be involved in it and continue it forward with the US Air Force to develop it further. Those guys out there, they're looking at biometrics. They're looking at absolutely. It's a bit like a Formula One team where they're, you know, looking at marginal gains, and so they look at everything and they assess everything. They've got NASA coming in to now bring biometric testing into the system. So it's a very it's a really, I've probably said interesting far too many times, but it's a fascinating project and a fascinating trial, and that's how they are that they're using that at the moment. But one of the things, just as an aside, just to kind of answer your question, Parky, that they can't do any of that that combat training in the Texan as you would want to. So they put in some of the systems, they made them F-18s, and they gave them a radar, and they gave them a quick, said, right, this is how you use the radar on this system. It's, you know, like a computer game. And they said, right, now that you know a little bit about it, you're going to defend the target. You've got four F-18s with radar capability, and the instructors are going to be in non-radar aircraft, and they're going to come in and try and hit the target, and you've got to stop them. And apparently the boys did remarkably well, you know, with the having used this virtual reality kit a little bit and being able to manipulate then the radar and the systems that this virtual aircraft had. they did really well. So again, you know, there's real potential there.
Well, Dunk, that reminds me of it was one of the trials that I was just trying to do. We never actually got it off the ground in F-35, where we'd go and get a bunch of gamers who are, you know, used to you know, whatever game system they're used to playing, you know, whether it's Call of Duty or a flying game, and just give them an F-35 cockpit and tell them off you go and see how they fight it. Just to see if there's something that, you know, the way we're taught, the way, you know, for almost 30 years for us of flying around the place is ingrained. Therefore, it's difficult to try and innovate and do something different. Just if there was something missing, especially with F-35, where all of the sensors, the situational awareness that you get from it, that you might be able to do something completely different, that it is not something that we do during training. And I'm not talking about, you know, how you fly the aeroplane. It's how you use the aeroplane to defeat other aircraft. So I think that'd still be a really, really interesting thing to do, you know, in a sort of declassified sim, just to get a bunch of people in who are used to doing that sort of stuff and see what they get up to.
Yeah, hey, God, how good is the F-35 sim? I mean, essentially, you do sims, and then you know there's no two seaters, so you then just obviously jump in the jet and off you go. But is the sim good for kind of close formation, for all of that generic flying, as well as the operating it?
Yeah, it is good actually, as you'd expect. That there's two different types of sim. There's the full mission simulator, which it's almost a little fairground ride to get into it, where you get into the cockpit, you press two buttons at the front, and it motors into this reasonably small but 360-degree dome, you know, so essentially a sphere.
Hmm.
And then it's all projected on the inside. So the fidelity is really good, and obviously you have a full 360-degree view when you're in there. There's another type of sim called the DMRT, the Deployed Mission Trainer, which is... JB, do you understand what I mean when I say an ISO container? You know, so just a shipping container. In fact, you know exactly what a shipping container is.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's a shipping container, and within that shipping container, there are two little mini sims and an instructor console in the middle. It's pretty tight there, but you go and sit in. It hasn't got the full 360, but it's still pretty awesome. You know, you've got the helmet on, and you can fly as a pair. You can plug, you know, two of these together, and that's exactly what we're doing on the Queen Elizabeth class carriers. So I think the very first time that aircraft carriers will have simulation aboard, which is brilliant because it doesn't negate the need to go out and do deck landings, but it means that you can do sort of high-end flying, you know, do all of the sort of stuff that you would do in an F-35 in the aircraft hangar on the ship in two ISO containers flying as a four ship, which is utterly brilliant. And so is really groundbreaking stuff. But it is a great sim. So you can do all of that, you know, all of those things that you talked about. But the thing that we're always looking for is where's the sweet spot, as Dunk said, you know, to get good at all these things in the real world, in an ideal world, we'd go off and do what you do in a Spitfire. You'd fly all the time. So, I mean, blimey, mate, I guess you don't even have to think when you get in a Spit or do what you do, taking people around the White Cliffs of Dover and those sorts of things. But someone who had done all of their training in a simulator and then gets in it for the first time is suddenly going to have that heartbeat issue, might not, you know, weather, fuel, the feeling you get when you're running out of fuel, the diversions are closed, you've got to come up with a plan, etc. How do you replicate all of those things? And what is the best mix between simulation and live flying?
Yeah.
And there's the science behind it is really difficult because every single person is different.
Mm. Now I'm just going to give a quick shout out. There is a Twitter account called Think Defense, which I frequently look at. The reason I'm going to shout out is because everything on there is containerized. It is almost an account dedicated to how you can fit things into ISO containers.
I think Defense is good, actually. That is a good read for any aviation or defense geeks out there. That's
yeah,
where I get
it
most of my intel.
A quick one.
Hey, listen, just before we go on, we've been sort of dancing around. JB sort of, I don't know why, you know, there's been a little bit of pottering around on eggshells, but You know, that second thing that I mentioned, I just think it's worth, you know, we're running out of time.
That's right. We've only got 10 minutes, actually, haven't we?
Yeah, Parky's got he's on a promise or something. And so there was just, you know, another time
that
I saw Parky, which was actually in a magazine. I'm surprised to see.
Yeah, I've got to go back to dunk, so it's been great. So,
well, just hang on a second. The face of the Battle of Britain is Parky. You know, and so he's wearing an Irvine flying jacket, he is now the new face of the Battle of Britain's sort of iconic jacket, the Irvine flying jacket.
Yeah. Well, the amazing thing about that picture, which is the only thing which wasn't from the original Battle of Britain, was actually that jacket.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it is true, yeah. And Goddard was saying rightly that that it's a shame that you don't have a social media account, Parko, because there was some fantastic banter. Our friend Christian Gleave was particularly accurate when he pointed out that it was like putting new polish on an old boot.
I do wonder, Parko.
In fact, the picture that got sent to us on the... Twitter was from Athel Forbes at Strangely Happy, and it says, "Lordy opened up the November at Flypast Mag, and Parky is also now a model. Hashtag movies next." And there's a little elbow up in front of a spit with a Irvine jacket on, looking. But and even with, have you got your glasses on there as well?
Yes, I've got my glasses.
So
it's the exact look. It's the fresh face look of the Battle of Britain, isn't it?
Yeah. It is.
Yeah.
So look at that, and that Irvine matches his hair as well.
You wanted the younger generation. Parky's the man, isn't he?
Yeah. So two things struck me about first of all,
do you remember a phone call I gave you? I'd just done it, and I thought, oh god, maybe it's just going to be for a handout. And nobody will see. And anyway, yeah, I think it's in the RAF Centenary Yearbook. And I thought, God. Oh, this is going to well end for me, Dunk. And there we go.
Yeah, there it is. I can't tell you how delighted I was, Parky.
I mean, I'm going to say...
Parky, did you get a free jacket?
No.
What?
Oh, you're such a liar.
I didn't. No, it was
did
just...
Did this for free?
This was between, you know, six trips, quick, the aviation leather craft, I think, there, you know, click. I got a little carried away. I accept that. You know, it's next to the moment.
That's a bit tight of them. So they advertise their jacket with the legendary Anthony Parkinson.
Hang on, how much did they pay you, Parky?
They didn't even give you a jacket.
No, it took about 10 minutes, and then I went and flew again. Thought nothing more about it until I needed to call you.
Oh, see, my word.
Dunk nailed it at the beginning. This is the issue, Parky. You are flying too much.
Yep. I've got to say, the lack of self-awareness in these photos is, quite frankly, staggering. And the thought that you... To think you wouldn't have got caught up on this, again, staggering.
Have you ever seen David Brent's album cover?
Do you remember those shots we did when I was on the Reds and we did a full set? Some footballer was there.
Yeah.
And I was on the deck and did the whole thing. You're sort of lying on the desk with my feet up and stuff. Oh, it was horrendous. Very good, though.
Yeah.
Right. Anyway.
The other thing is your hair is well out of crosswind limits in those photos.
It was the way.
Yeah. Now, Goddess, have you, this is your part of the podcast where you've queued up questions. But the fact that you forgot we had a podcast, does that mean that you haven't queued up any questions?
No, it means I've just had to go back to questions that we haven't got to previously.
Perfect. So what are our questions?
Right, here's one from Dad Goggles, which I think is a great name. Look, it's as if I planned this. Just listen to the brilliant pilot episode pod. That's one
Stop
of our
it.
Listeners. Well done. Talking weird things produced by the military, is... And there's a picture down here. Is this Skyhook for Harriers being tested on the side of carriers right now?
What? Sorry.
You ought to describe the picture, though, Goddard, because otherwise it doesn't make much sense, does it?
Well, there's a picture of it's an old, I guess that's a T4N, isn't it? Or whatever they used to call it, a T8N. A Sea Harrier 20 being lift it. In fact, no, is that the original? I'm just reading the caption, which is good radio, obviously.
This is great. This is brilliant.
I think it
was
one of
the best questions you've ever done.
Great, great podding.
One of the original Skyhook, which is a large crane arm with a hook on it. And so instead of having to land your jet, you just turn up underneath it and it grabs you out the sky like one of those things in the arcade where you try and grab stuff.
That does make a lot of sense. Why did we not use it?
Because it's ridiculous.
Why?
Mental.
Why is it ridiculous, Parky?
I'd love to know why.
Why is it ridiculous?
Well, because I guess the hook, as it sort of grabs you, would probably damage a fair amount of the aeroplane. Unless you put big sponges on it.
Well, I mean, it depends what it's grabbing. I mean, you would have thought, wouldn't you, that an arrestor would rip off the aft fuselage, but it doesn't.
Yeah, so this is my point about innovation. The reason, Parker, you think it's ridiculous is because you've landed aeroplanes on their wheels most of the time in the last 60 years, or however long you've been flying.
No, it is ridiculous.
Well, it hasn't exactly caught on, has it?
excuse the pun.
Only because you refuse to test things like that. I'm all up for it. You remember Winkle Brown landed with no gear on a rubber deck?
Yes, indeed.
He accepted that was ridiculous.
Yeah.
After he did it 100 times.
Yeah.
I think that's a very smart idea, that.
So the answer is no.
Dunk, were you on the ship? I heard a story of one of the guys who'd it was either lost an outrigger, so one of the outrigger wheels on a Harrier, on takeoff, it wouldn't come down. So he held in the overhead whilst I had to think about it. And apparently they went down to a couple of the cabins, lashed a load of mattresses together, and then put it on the flight deck so that he could come down and it would rest on the side of these things. Obviously, as soon as he started coming down, this thing just blew off the side of the ship.
Well, there is quite a good video, isn't there, of a US Marine Harrier coming down without his nose gear.
Yeah.
It was Terry Parker who took off on an air test at Wittering. And as he stowed, the short takeoff, so pulled the lever, leapt into the air, the main wheels bounced off in front of him.
I was on the OCU at the time.
Yeah, I knew it was around that sort of time that we were going through. Yeah.
It was a great jet, wasn't it?
Yeah, things just falling off.
Brilliant. But then there wasn't a snag with him putting it down, Parco.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. Lovely.
Wheels.
Right, we've got 3 minutes before Parky goes, so next question.
Talk amongst yourselves at the moment. I'm just looking because there's so many pictures of Parky.
You have a look. I'm just going to say one more thing, which I was so. The other thing that I went to, which was marvelous, just last weekend, was LLA Day, which is Lynx Lanx Association Day at.
You get an invite
at Coningsby. It was Millie who took over from me. It was his last day 3 years ago. On Saturday, when I handed over to him and Flipping Eck, he's handing over to Disco now. So Mark Disco is going to take over tonight.
Yeah, he's been the best boss ever.
What?
Best boss much ever.
Yeah, he was much better than the old guy.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, he was an idiot. But it was great to see the aeroplanes again. I hadn't been back there for some time, so I understand you were there, Parky, but you literally sort of danced in and danced out again.
Half hour said good luck to Millie, and then I was in the car park and
eat
it.
Was there an Irvine jacket in the cockpit of said rubbish car?
I did a quick modelling in it, looked good, and went home. Yeah.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm looking through these pictures here. This Skyhook is quite frankly genius. I can't believe that you've rubbished it.
See, I'm with you, JB. So, this is my whole point about innovation. It's not going to happen with a bunch of old men who've been doing the same thing.
I'm also going to point.
They did, but the point, you boys, you've lost it. They did innovate it. And they went, it doesn't work.
I'm also going to point.
It's not like, this is innovation. It's not. They innovated it. They found it didn't work. They did it.
So, I actually think, right?
Retards.
It's
the cleverest thing you've ever said, mate.
It's one thing to grab a Harrier out the sky, right, and throw it on a destroyer or what have you, like demonstrating on these pictures. Limited utility. But imagine an F-35 with all those sensors and all the data fusion. I mean, that's actually really useful.
I'm all for testing, but that's silly.
Anyway.
Anyway.
So, I think we've run out of time, but I did. It's not a question, but I would like to read out what Mark Welsh, young frog, at Flap 62. I know what he's thinking there. But at Pilot Episode Pod, listening to episode 5 and enjoying it, fellas, which we know getting a compliment from Frog is always. It's a lottery.
Okay.
Which he then covers in the next sentence. Strange to hear that Dunk was recommended F3 from TAC Weapons. I say strange because exactly the conclusion we came to on A Flight on the OCU.
Did you see my reply?
Oh no, hang on. I have to do some stuff on that. I can't read that. It's swearing. It won't surprise you that. As a course on A Flight, we came to the same conclusion that you'd be better suited to British Airways. That's very good, mate.
But he's probably right.
So yes. I guess we should wrap it up then. So you're dismissed. You may leave, and we'll tie this whole thing up.
Awesome. Cheers, boys.
Have a lovely time, Parko.
See you, mate.
Whatever you're doing.
Thanks for your lovely time.
So yeah,
he's going to model another
flying
jacket.
Helmets.
Of course he is. Of course he is.
Oh, please let him be with one of those caps with the fur inside, with the ears that flap down.
Oh,
here,
those, no. Parko.
Does anyone know?
Are you still there, Parky? We're talking about you.
Yes, I am.
You have to have a hair transplant and some Botox.
Oh, dear. Right. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah. Clear off.
Thanks.
Oh, can't remember what I was going to say then. No, can't remember. Right, okay. So I guess next time that we're all going to be together is going to be in Heathrow, is it?
Sure, we can sneak in a quick one before then. I've got so much more stuff to talk about on this one.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'll write it all down and we can do another one next week or the week after.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I mean, we can carry on now for a bit if you wish.
No, it's all right. I'm going to have to go, but the... I've written down a load of things that we could have speared off into. An hour isn't long enough. I'm sure we've managed someone's commute, though.
Yeah, well, we're bang on an hour, which is weird for us. It's usually a two-hour ramble. Okay, so next time we're together, maybe it's Heathrow, maybe it's not. But when we're there, we will be testing the British Airways simulator. So thank you very much to them for lending us that. It's the A380 sim. Until then, you can get in touch with us at Pilot Episode Pod, which Godders diligently manages, and I occasionally dip in. Are you on that as well, Mason?
Am I what?
Are you on Pilot Episode Pod? Do you have access to that?
Yeah, I do, yeah.
Oh, there you go. So yeah, you can get access to all of us there. And if you've got any questions or you want to leave a review on Apple Podcasts or anything like that, please do so, because it'd be much appreciated. But until next week, when we come to you again with more dits and random aviation bits and pieces, goodbye, and we'll see you soon.
Bye.
See ya. Bye-bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.